Professor Brené Brown's research shows that vulnerability fosters good emotional and mental health. It is a sign of courage. We become more resilient and brave when we embrace who we truly are and what we are feeling. The Vulnerable Scientist Podcast is a space for scientists to tell their honest and authentic stories. I am your host, Sarah Nyakeri, who happens to be a scientist, informal science communicator, and I help scientists create personal websites. If you want to support this show, go to www.patreon.com/thevulnerablescientist. You can also follow this podcast on all social media platforms at TV Scientist Pod. Hi everyone, welcome to the Vulnerable Scientist Podcast. This is your host, Sarah Nyakeri, and today I have someone special who we'll have a good conversation with, and I don't know much about him, and that's the most exciting part because we're going to learn about him together. So, Mambori,
yes,
welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
I don't know why I've chosen to call you the second name.
Well,
sounds more interesting. It sounds more interesting compared to the English name. Okay, introduce yourself so that,
So, thank you for having me. My name is Samuel Mbui, and probably a stranger to you and others, but I've been following your podcast and, you know, the activities that you've been doing online. I think for some of us, we're not really good at, you know, the online platforms that we're trying. So, once again, thank you for having me here.
Okay, that's good to hear. Okay, so tell us who you are and what you're currently doing.
Samuel Mamburi from Taita County, Taita County, that is. I think probably it's important for me to talk about my background because that's what technically has shaped me to who I am today. So, born and bred in Udani constituency, in a village called Magoro. So, I grew up as a typical Kenyan child in a local primary school, middle high school. And I think for me, I discovered the life of sciences in high school. So, my journey started pretty much when I was in Form 4. Used to do, you know, the normal science congress thing. I was in a science club, and this time we went to the provincial levels. And at that moment, my partner and I did a presentation on, you know, some microbes, you know, to help deal with soil fertility and all that. The most interesting bit is throughout the journey, nobody understood what we were talking about because we were intrigued by just using those fancy scientific names, you know, the agrobacterium, blah, 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 all that. So, it sounded really fancy at that level. We didn't even know how much of an impact that was going to be to maybe some of us like me. So, throughout the whole competition, no one would ask questions. Even the judges themselves, they couldn't ask questions. So, at national level, at provincial levels, we fell short by one position. Go to the national level. And then I went back to school and I was like, wow, I think this is what I need to do. I think part of it was because I wanted to see how can you be able to communicate these complex things in a simplified way, you know? Probably that has been the silent drive throughout my journey, but I'm still yet to maybe achieve it or even get close to it, yeah?
Okay.
I think things keep getting complicated as we go on. So, by the time we were doing selections for the course that we went to do, I'd already made up my mind. I wanted to do something to do with biology. So I approached my biology teacher. Her name is Miss Kilo. She was such an amazing teacher. She made biology really interesting and easy, an easy subject. You know, we used to call them boosters. Yeah, like you don't need to read up anything to do with biology, but you know you will pass because her classes were really, 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 really interesting, and she was really good at in her job.
Biology was your booster.
Oh, that was a booster. I didn't need to do so much as far as biology is concerned. Yeah. So I approached her and I was like, okay, I have something to do with biology. I didn't even know what I wanted to do. Then okay, so she ended up like, you could maybe try and do some biotechnology and biochemistry. Like, those were the only options as of that time, yeah? So I said, okay, I'm going to do biotechnology. So during the selection process, number one was biotechnology, number two, biotechnology, number three, biotechnology.
Allah. Wait a minute.
In the same university.
You know, when... You could select the same unit, the same course in the same university?
Yes, that's what I did. I didn't want any other option.
Which university was this?
I had to go to Technical University of Kenya. Then it was Kenya Polytechnic University College.
Why?
I wanted to be in a town setting. I think I grew up in a village, so I didn't want to be anywhere far away from the town. I wanted like, okay, mm-hmm. experience. I wanted to feel the thrill of being in a city, you know? That was the main drive at that very moment.
Okay. So, I didn't know about... Okay, when us we are choosing subjects, most of us didn't know about biochemistry or biotechnology. I'm surprised that...
Yeah.
You, because most of the people in my class, they had chosen something else, then they were maybe thrown to biochemistry, for example. It's interesting to know that there was someone who actually knew what they wanted, and it was actually something to do with biotech or something like that. Like, most people don't know that. That's interesting.
Yeah, for me, I knew about that right when I was in Form 4. So I was privileged to have that teacher, and I think that motivation kind of directed me there. So that's what I picked. I didn't want to do any other thing other than biotech. I probably had made a commitment that mine is going to be a journey in the life sciences. So after that, I made it and I went to took my bachelor's. So as usual, you know, you're excited about life, you want to discover everything, and went through the process, cleared my graduate studies, and after that, immediate graduation, I started like, okay, I'm going to go ahead and pursue this tree of knowledge. So I was partially funded by my parents, go for an MEC, still in biotech, and that's what I did.
Same university?
No, I went to Jomo Kenyatta University, JKUAT.
Why?
At that time, I think I was late for other institutions' intakes. So that was the only available option at that moment. So I'm like, okay, I'm not going to sit down anymore. I've spent like the past 4 months probably doing nothing important. And I just need to get back, you know?
Why was that?
At this level... At this level, my drive was I wanted to go into academia. I've always wanted to, you know, teach or share knowledge, you know, and for me that felt like, I used to feel like lecturing was such a fulfilling job, you know. So my motivation was like, I'm going to do my MSc, then come apply for a teaching assistant or something, and then, you know, grow along that ladder. Then did my coursework, cleared, then came the project. So at this moment, you know, those moments when you clear your coursework, you become confused. Okay, I don't know whether that happens to everyone, but for me, I was really confused at that level. And that kind of now, like, takes us to my first lows. Because I feel I know so much, I understand so many things, yes, but still I don't even know what I want to do with all that information. I don't know, probably it's because of, you know, the way maybe the curriculum is set up, or I don't, there's so many confounding factors, but at the end of the day, for me, that was a very confusing stage, you know, in my life. I didn't know exactly which direction I'm supposed to go after this. So I went to one of my lecturers from undergraduate studies, and she was such an amazing person because she mentored me through the first project I did at undergraduate level. I had my coursework, and at this moment I don't even know what I want to do with my life. I have no clue which direction to go, so she listened to me like, I'll contact you after a few days. So I waited after 4 days, I'm like, okay, hey, so I have this idea. I need you to like read around it, see what can be done with the resources that we have. And I'm like, wow, cool, this is nice. At least now you're giving me some, you know, something to hold on to. And did some literature reviews, went back to her, and we sat down, and right there and then a project came into play, and that's what I did for my MSc project. Now, at this point, you know, life is changing. You are a student, you're growing up, you have to survive, you're in Nairobi, and I'm sure you understand all these things.
Yeah.
So, the hassle is real, you know. So as that time I was working part-time in one of food delivery companies in Nairobi. I used to work from 5 p.m. to around 1 a.m. night shift.
Wow.
Yes.
That's so many hours. Around
what? Seven to eight hours.
Yes. That's after a whole day of working again.
Yes. Like yes, you're working. Yes. Mm. Exactly. So during the day, I'm in the lab. I have to do my work. When it gets to around 5, I chuck and I head to my workplace. I work up to midnight. I leave, go home, sleep. Wake up very early in the morning by around 6. I'm out, you know, trying to beat traffic and all those things. So that, of course, takes a toll, because you see, at the end of the day, I need to pay my bills. I need to pay my school fee, because I was just self-sponsored. So everything, you know, in that whole pot. So it got to a point I couldn't do all those, because it was becoming too much. Now the research is demanding, I need to spend more time in the lab. Sometimes I have to sleep in the lab because I have to optimize the processes and all that. So yeah, that was quite something. So I made a decision. I quit the job. I focused on the project. The good thing is that at that moment they were offering just like a small stipend, you know. It wasn't much.
But oh, before that they weren't.
No, at that moment I was also being offered a stipend, but it wasn't enough actually. You'd say it was just more like you're being given something small to ensure you go back to work tomorrow, you know? Yeah. 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 That's what we call it, yeah. So that's what was happening. Yeah. So I decided, okay, I'll just stop. Let me focus on my studies, my research work. I finish, and then after that, probably, you know, hope for the best. So just immediately after doing that, something interesting really happened, and that really shaped things in ways that I wouldn't have imagined in my life. So my girlfriend and I got pregnant. So now all of a sudden, the world is opening up to new possibilities. We are all young, we are, you know, you don't know exactly what to do, how to go about it. You still have school, you know, you're not independent in any possible way, but, you know, that's something too, right? So, I actually quit a job, so now, you know, you don't have even the financial stability. Yeah, so now that brings me to my second law. So immediately I was done with my project, and the baby came. We're excited. That was a blessing. That will never change. But now there's the other aspect you need to take care of. I need to take care of my wife and our newborn. But I couldn't job, no work. You've applied, you know, the usual, you know, you send as many applications as possible, no response. But at least there's some organizations that were, you know, courteous enough to even tell you, like, okay, you don't qualify because of this and that and this and that. But in most cases, you never get response. So the point where it really hit the bottom was one day we woke up and my wife and I had 100 shillings between us and poverty.
And you have and a child. Baby.
Yes. Some weeks old. So at that moment, I just like, okay, yo, let me have that 100 book, and I hit the streets. And I became a boda boda rider.
Wait, where did you get the boda boda?
I had a bike before that.
Okay.
It used to ferry me from school to work and from my lab to work. I couldn't do without at that moment. Yeah, so that was the asset that I had. So I got the 100 book and bought some fuel, and I went and just stood in a random place. I said, okay, like, God, today I need to see miracles, because if this doesn't happen, I don't know what's going to happen next. So I stood there, and miraculously, that evening I went home with around 1,000 bob from 100 bob.
Wow, that's your first day.
The first day, and mark you, I had started working from 3.
What?
By 5, I had that. 1,000 bob. I feel with that 100 shillings that I was given. Yes.
You were given by your wife?
Yes.
Okay. Wow, that's impressive, honestly.
100 bob is what fed us that day.
Wow.
And from there, that was a whole year of hustling, you know? Like,
I just using the motorbike.
Yeah, exactly. Do what I could, and I had to do it the best way possible to ensure, you know, we survive. And funny thing, things just somehow changed, you know. All of a sudden, I had to see the world in a very different angle, and I realized, like, wow, somehow I'm becoming a statistics, you know, the usual story. You know, you graduate, you have a degree, and no jobs, and life continues, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I was almost, you know, accepting that was the fact. Then one day, while I was just hustling, I of course I used to keep, you know, still in touch with my science, you know, time go read papers online, check if there are any job postings that are relevant to me and all that. And this day I just saw a job advert that was 110% fit for me.
Uh-huh.
They wanted a biotechnologist with molecular biology background as a research assistant.
Experience?
It was an entry level job.
So it was just perfect for you. You just knew this is now.
That was just it. I am like, okay, I've been applying for jobs throughout my life, or rather since I cleared campus. But, you know, most of them you're usually gambling. You know, it's like you even apply for things that you even know you're not qualified for, but you still have faith, you know. Probably they'll pick you for some reasons.
And that's so real.
Yeah, I mean, that's
applying
true,
for things
honestly.
That you're not qualified for, hoping that something will happen. That's real.
You know, those moments when you even know they want a 15-year experience and you have zero, and you're like, probably they'll not get the 15 years, they'll just get the zeros and I'll be there, you know, if they pick.
Sisindo tuko.
Exactly. So I had to show up, no matter what. So I went, googled the institution. That was my very first time hearing about that institution. That is Kenya Marine and Fisheries Research Institute. I didn't know about it before that.
But you're from those sites.
Exactly. That was the most weird thing.
Is that Kemfri?
No. Kemfri, yes.
Yeah. Okay.
So until then, I didn't know about Kemfri. So I googled it up, checking, like, okay, they don't do anything to do with molecular biology, biotech or anything. Okay, this is strange, but since it's a posting and I know I need a job, just do it. I sent my application. And I'm like, wow, you know, you normally have that idea, like, well, if you're applying for a government job, probably you're just doing a formality. That's really the thought. And that was the thought, actually, to be honest. Yeah? So I still did it. I applied for the job and forgot about it. Kept on hustling as usual. And 1 year after, exactly 12 months, I get an email. Hello, so-and-so, this is so-and-so from Camfrey, and we'd like to invite you for an interview. And I'm like, what do you mean?
What?
I'd even forgotten about it. I had to go back and check my history. When did I send this?
How did I apply?
Okay, what? Did send this. Yeah,
what CV did I send?
I need to check what did I write? You know, how did I polish my CV and all that? So I went back home. I was confused, you know? Those moments you're just totally confused. And I prepared for the interview and went to Mombasa. Did my interview.
This is from Nairobi.
Best. Yeah, from Nairobi. Did my interview and came back home. Forgot about it again because you're like, ah, probably I was just there to, I'm just a statistics. At least they did the due process, you know, that's usually the attitude. And I kept doing what I was doing, you know.
Yeah.
And then, interestingly, after 4 months, I get an email like, congratulations, you got the position. I was actually on the road. I changed the whole dynamics and I usually called it the transport industry. So I called myself a transport entrepreneur at that moment, you know, just to feel good about it.
But you were a transport entrepreneur.
Yeah, you know, like, you know, those moments when you just want to feel good. The whole thing. Every day you get to do such things, and you know you've gone to school, you have a degree, you have an MSc certificate and all that, but there's nothing to show for it, you know. It's something that you always want to say it, you know, in a silent way. So I stopped doing whatever I was doing and I went back home and celebrated with my wife, and wow, that was the beginning of a new journey. So I reported to work, met these people who are really, really kind and welcoming, and you know, it's those one of those places where you really feel welcomed, you know. You meet strangers but you feel at home.
Wait, this is after how long of completing your MSc?
That was 2 years.
Wow. The whole time you were doing Boda Boda?
Your time you had the Boda Boda hustling. Actually, let's just say 1.5 until I got the letter, the appointment letter.
Mm-hmm.
So before I started any report, I'll still be doing whatever I was doing. And honestly, things were looking up. I had really like established my client base. I was even thinking about expanding. So either way, I was still, you know, pushing myself to all kinds of limits.
So it's not like you were really struggling. It's just that the kind of job that you're doing was not what you had.
Actually, exactly. So the most weird thing is, for whatever offer I was being given, I would make way more than that in the border industry. But you see, the problem is you always want security. You want to be stable. You want to know that tomorrow, if something happens, you still have somewhere to go back. You know?
Wait, so before that...
Yes.
Before that, you were getting offers. Before that letter, that appointment letter, you were still applying, I'm assuming, right?
Yeah, I did apply. I didn't get a single offer from anybody.
Okay.
The usual. You send, no response. You keep sending. Sometimes you'll be like, okay, I'm not sending anymore. You just quit for 2 weeks or a week. And then you go back to doing it again. You know? Still chasing the dream. Yeah? So, I packed and went to Mombasa. Started working there. And I think that's the most life-changing moment in my life. Because for once I was able to do something that I've been training for. You know, you spent 6-7 years for that particular job, you know.
And you actually wanted it.
Exactly. You know, I think I say most of the time I'm really lucky, you know, to say the least. Most people do things not because they want, but because they need to be paid at the end of the day. But in this case, I was in a place where I am able to do exactly what I'm looking for and what I love to.
Because something I've come to realize that most people don't really like what they do. They're not even passionate about it, but like, I don't know. That's, I think, one question that I ask most people, even strangers. Are you happy with what you do? What would you rather be doing? You know, such questions. And it's interesting just to see how people do what they have to do just because they have to do it. They have to pay their rent, they have to take care of their family. If they have family, they have to take care of their bills and such like things. It's just interesting. And I feel sad. I don't know. I'm a very high sensitive person, and it takes a toll on me just knowing that there's someone out there who's doing something they actually don't like, but they have to do it because they have to do it. What is even sadder is when you ask someone, what would you rather be doing, and they actually really don't know. Anyway, yeah, it's nice to know that you finally got this job that you wanted.
Yeah.
You really wanted. So they had a molecular lab that you think they did?
Yes, it was still a young molecular biology lab. They didn't have really much. So actually the reason why that position was created is because they need to get things funded.
Oh.
So, yes.
So you're the first?
Yeah, I had a colleague also who had done some application on molecular biology in terms of population genetics and all that.
Mm.
But now you see they needed someone who is deeply rooted in the molecular biology aspect.
Okay.
So I got there really excited, full of energy, you know, and million possibilities. And then to make it even interesting, I'm working in a field that I've never been into. I don't know anything about
marine.
I don't know anything about aquatics, you know. It was just a whole new field for me, and it was really exciting and overwhelming at the same time.
What so were you doing before?
Possibilities. No, before that I was really into terrestrial microbiology mostly.
Mm. What did you do your project on?
My project on was like trying to get biopolymers from terrestrial bacteria.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to it was rooted on the plastic bands. So the idea was to try and generate bioplastics from microbes.
Oh.
Interesting. Yes.
So what about your undergraduate?
Concept. My undergraduate, we were trying to develop, wanted to make fuel from, like a biofuel. That's the whole concept. And wanted to make
biotech.
Some sort of gel, yes, from gels from eggshells and ethanol.
Yeah.
To make some, yes.
What are you getting from the eggshell?
It was calcium carbonate. That's what we were targeting, to see whether we can use it as a binding agent to, it didn't really go the way we expected, but along the way we learned so many things, and it really redirected us to other greater things along that, that direction.
So this is you moving from this field to a whole new thing.
Exactly. So now here I am.
Learning everything. Like from scratch again.
Everything from scratch. So the learning curve is steep, as you can imagine. But the beauty is the application, the tools, they're just the same. So long as you know what DNA is, what RNA is, and what proteins are, then it doesn't matter which organism they come from.
That's the interesting bit about molecular biology. Like you don't really have to, like it's something that can be applied in any kind of any organism, whatever. Yes. It's the same. It's the same PCR. Same. Everything.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So the most interesting bit is like, for me, I was like, wow. 70% of the world is covered by water. That means by default we have more organisms in the aquatic setting or aquatic environment than we have on land. So that's extremely huge.
Yeah.
So I got there, I had so many ideas in my head, and lucky enough, after 6 months, I got a proposal and sent to one of the donors, and I got a funding for that project.
Hmm.
So, see, like, things are really picking up really fast pace.
Wait, what made you?
Sudden. Yeah.
What made you write a proposal? Like, was it part of your job, or is just sort of? What exact? Why did you write?
Okay, so for government setting, there are two methods of operation.
Mm-hmm.
There are the government-funded projects, and we have donor-funded projects. So in most cases, the government funding is usually, in my perspective, will be for, you know, the conservation aspect. It's usually on things that, you know, are impacting the community directly, but people really forget so much about fundamental sciences, you know, whether you want to fund things to do with DNA, like how will DNA help the community, you know, that's really the first question. And we forget like that is the fundamental, you know, blueprint of life. So most of the time we had to get funding to be able to do some of these kinds of research work, but whatever the government was funding could not really be directed towards, you know, that curiosity science or exploratory science. So for us, we have to look for funds, you know, to do such things. So I was fortunate to be among guys who awarded that year, and started working on. So my project was actually on using environmental DNA to map fish diversity, and up until last year, doing my final data analysis. So probably get a paper out soon, and that immediately shaped my, you know, my line of thinking, what I want to do in the future. So last year again, last year but one actually, so I've never really looked for PhD positions, but one day I get this alert in my email from a colleague, like, check this out, and if you're interested, apply. This is exactly what I need. That very moment, like, I'm like, okay, this is what I need. I've seen so many other opportunities, but this one fits my profile. So I sent an email to the prospective supervisor. We had a chat. The supervisor was interested. So I secured a position in the university. And this is Tokyo University of Marine Science and Technology in Japan. Thereafter, I was supposed to seek for funding. I applied for the funds through the government of Japan, the program they call the Next Scholarship. And by last year, June, they had responded, and I was one of the guys who applied for that fund. And this is where I am today. So I'm a student at the Tokyo University of Marine Science and Technology, pursuing a PhD in aquatic biosciences, and my interest is in, or rather my line right now is in aquatic genomics. I'm interested in looking at microbial ecology. I want to see, you know, the functional role of microbes in a community. So I know so much has been done on individual organisms, but the culture independent methods that are, you know, becoming more popular by day, that's what I want to go into. And I'm looking forward to what the future brings. So in a nutshell, that's my story. That's me.